I just found out that my hospital offers, quote, complimentary doulas that mm-hmm. you can request when you get admitted. So you wouldn't mm-hmm. know them prior to arrival. Mm-hmm. They said that the doulas are volunteers. What do you mm-hmm. think of this? Pros and cons?
Mm-hmm.
What a good question.
That is a really great question.
Yeah. A really great question. Some
I have a lot of thoughts. Yeah.
I know, me too. Hi, I'm Rachel, owner of the Natural Birth Site, certified birth doula, childbirth educator, and midwife's assistant.
And I'm Tiffany Muniz, certified birth doula, lactation counselor, and midwife assistant.
Here, you'll learn all about different aspects of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum.
Remember, none of this information should take the place of your care provider and is not medical advice.
Birth is not a medical emergency.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Natural Birth Talk. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Tiffany.
And today we are doing a question and answer session after our long intervention series, which has been so great. Apologize for the length of that last episode. we just got on a roll talking about postpartum intervention. So. So, Tiffany, I know you just had something like kind of creepy happen that made us put off recording for a little bit.
Yeah. Something creepy. Still don't really know what's going on. But yeah, just some like random person parked in front of my house and like started recording my house.
I just had an idea. Maybe it was someone who's a big fan of our podcast and figured out where you lived and what is stalking you.
Right. I know. Yeah, I don't know. So I was all freaked out, called the cops, called my husband, everyone, you know, and I know probably most people don't know, I live in a really small community. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if somebody needed something from me, like they could have just come up to my door or asked or, you know, I don't know, emailed me, texted me, like something.
Yeah.
So it's just a little weird. So I'm a little worked up, but I think I'm finally calm enough now to like record.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Cause the police stopped by your house and talked to you and they're going to put your house on the route of.
Right. Driveways. I live in a really great community. So at first I was like nervous. Do I call? Like, what do I do? I don't want mm-hmm. them to think I'm being dramatic or, you know, like taking advantage of resources or anything like that, you know? But he assured me if he sees the person, he's going to pull him over, see what's going on.
That's good.
So that definitely makes me feel a lot better. Good. And thankfully we have cameras. So I was able to take a picture of the vehicle. I saw the guy with my own eyes. So I was able to see exactly what he looked like. So I was able to give a description of him.
Well, I guarantee, like I already said, the cops have been called for dumber things. So
for sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's try to take your mind off of that and do our awesome question and answer series. So we've got a handful of questions we're going to answer. And we wanted to give an update on a question we had answered earlier in the series because it was for a mama who was giving birth soon. So we didn't want to make her wait till the question and answer series to give her an answer. So do you want to refresh us on what that question was?
Yeah. So I will read the story that she initially sent. So it says, for my first non-medicated natural hospital birth, my son was born less than an hour of arriving at the hospital. I was 10 centimeters when I arrived. They didn't have time to put in an IV or even print bracelets or officially admit me. After the birth, they did place an IV and I was so confused, but was given the it's hospital policy in case there is an emergency line. I was given something through the IV. I assumed it was fluids, but later at my 6-week appointment, I found out that it was Pitocin. She said that they give it to help deliver the placenta. As far as I can recall, I was never asked if I wanted it, nor obviously consented to my knowledge. I'm assuming that this practice of giving Pitocin after birth is common in a hospital, but what are your thoughts on it? Another thing that you can decline, right? Fast forward to my second natural hospital birth. Placing the IV upon being admitted was the worst experience ever. Mm-hmm. I was in transition. I arrived to the hospital at 7 centimeters. After 4 nurses tried and literally being pricked all over both arms and hands, the midwife came in and got it the first try. For someone who hates needles in the first place, then to go through that just to be given Pitocin after delivering the baby, I just question this practice of placing IVs for emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
I am due with baby number 5 next month, and this will be my 3rd non-medicated natural birth. Thank you so much for the information you share. So we were able to answer that on air. I also sent her a bunch of information following that, so because we knew that she would be having her baby before we were able to answer the question on air.
And so she sent us an update, right?
She sent an update.
I'm excited about this.
She writes, My little girl arrived on Valentine's Day. Aww. I had a wonderful, natural, unmedicated hospital birth thanks to some of the advice from your recent podcast on interventions. My midwife was very supportive of my choices and made it clear to the nursing staff what I did, or rather did not want this time around. I went IV-free and Pitocin-free post-delivery, as well as had delayed cord clamping until it stopped pulsating.
Awesome.
I was even offered to feel the cord myself before clamping. And although I really wanted to have the fetal ejection reflex instead of coach pushing with this birth, I did eventually ask for her to break my water after being at 10 centimeters for an hour and a half without the urge to push. And what a relief that was. Next contraction, her head popped out and surprised us all. She was passed between my legs. I was on my hands and knees, and I snuggled my sweet newborn skin to skin as I waited for the placenta to deliver naturally without Pitocin or tugging or pulling. I'm so thankful for the information you share on your podcast. It helped me achieve the natural, unmedicated birth I wanted.
That's amazing. What an update. I love that so much. That is incredible. Good for her, too. I'm so glad. And I'm so glad her midwife was willing to work with her.
For sure.
You know, sometimes care providers don't want to agree, and you still have every right to refuse, but it's just such a sigh of relief when your midwife is advocating for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep.
So if you want to hear our full answer to her original question, I think that's in episode 2 or 3 of our second intervention series episode.
It was either 2 or 3.
So you guys can check back and listen to our full answer there. We don't want to take the time to do that today because we've already done it, and we have several more questions we want to get to, but we're just so excited for her. Do you have a first name?
Her name is Tiffany as well.
Oh, right. I forgot. Yeah. So we're so excited for Tiffany and so glad she was able to just have such a wonderful experience. And that water breaking, you know, sometimes just instinctively or intuitively, you know, that's what needs to be done and your baby comes right out.
Yep. And I think we did talk about that in one of the episodes, how I feel like it's more likely for it to work with moms who have had vaginal births before, how it like makes that big change. But also she was already 10 centimeters. I'm sure her baby was already low. So, but it doesn't matter. It worked for her.
So yeah. That's awesome.
That truly matters. Yeah.
That's so exciting. I'm so happy for her.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. So let's see. I've got another question. Okay. Her Instagram name is Linz, and it says, "Hi, ladies. I recently found your podcast when I decided that I'm going to try for an unmedicated birth for my first baby, and I cannot stop listening. I cannot stop listening. So thank you so much for such a great podcast. I do have a question for you guys, though. I just found out that my hospital offers, quote, complimentary doulas that you can request when you get admitted, so you wouldn't know them prior to arrival. They said that the doulas are volunteers. What do you think of this? Pros and cons?" What a good question.
That is a really great question.
Some
I have a lot of thoughts. Yeah.
I know. Me too.
Yeah.
So some hospitals offer this. It's pretty rare to find a hospital that offers this, but maybe more so in bigger cities, there are some that offer this kind of program. I know we used to have one in the St. Louis area that offers it. I don't know if we do anymore.
My hospital, like the hospital in my town, has it.
Do they?
It's actually a program through one of the counties, one of the more rural counties. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's awesome. So what do you think? Why don't you go ahead and go and tell what you think? It's probably the same thing I think, but.
Well, obviously I'm pro doula, right? Because I am a doula. And there are lots of studies to confirm, you know, what Rachel and I say all the time. When you use a doula, you have a decreased risk of C-section, decreased risk of like many interventions, a decreased chance that you ask for pain medication. I mean, there really are so many pros to working with a doula. Yes. However, part of what Rachel and I do is we really try to form and cultivate a relationship with our clients prior to labor. So we know them really well when we're going into the labor, right?
Right.
We know, we've talked about this, when you potentially, when you don't know somebody that well, it can create tension in the birth space. And obviously tension is not what we want when we're trying to open and have a baby.
True.
So that's one of my thoughts, is that, you know, that could be a little bit weird or odd, not knowing this person. My other thought is, I know you said that it's a volunteer doula, but I would just kind of question,
you know, who are they working for? Well, yeah, they're training, number one, but also who are they working for? Right. Are they going to be able to advocate for you in the ways that you might need somebody to advocate for you? Mm-hmm. I know that that can be really difficult for like doulas that work for the hospital, mm-hmm. because really you're employed by the hospital. You're not employed by the mom or the family. So that can get kind of like wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the question of training, what is their experience? How many births have they been to? What kind of workshops have they attended? You know, all of those things are important to kind of consider as well.
Right. Were they trained by the hospital? So, you know, they probably, I told her, they probably have some policies they need to follow. We're trained by the hospital or we're trained to behave in a certain way that the hospital supports. Right. So they're probably better than not having a doula at all. But at the same time, if you have the resources to hire an outside doula to start building that relationship, to pick someone that aligns with your values for your birth,
right.
mm-hmm. you know, that's going to be a lot better. And a doula that's not given to you by the hospital is probably going to be able to advocate for you in a stronger way. Cause like you said, you know, even though they're volunteers, they do still kind of work with the hospital. The hospital could mm-hmm. choose not to call them if mm-hmm. they don't behave in a way that's appropriate according to what the hospital wants.
Right. Exactly.
And then you also risk there not being any doulas available. Mm-hmm. You know, you might risk them being with other moms and unavailable if you can't book one ahead of time. And then maybe there's not a backup available.
Right.
So again, it's probably better than not having a doula at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have the means to hire a doula outside of that, you're going to get a more thorough, enriching experience with the doula because you build that relationship. And then you have the confidence of knowing that that doula works for you and not for anybody else.
Right. Exactly. Great question, though.
That is a really, really good question. I really felt like that.
Yep.
Okay. So then I have a question from Molly, and she was approaching an induction really, really close to her due date. And I did go ahead and answer her question privately because she was just a few days away from 42 weeks.
Okay.
So I answered it privately, but I thought it was a really good question. So first she asked about my favorite natural induction methods, which if you guys want to hear all of that, you can go to our intervention series episode just a few episodes ago about mm-hmm. natural induction methods.
Yep.
But then she asked about something we didn't talk about.
Hmm.
She said, today is my last day before the doctor says I have to go in and get things started. So I'm kind of desperate. What are your thoughts on a Fleet enema?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I've had one client before who did enemas before her births, like early in labor. And I actually didn't know about it until after her second that she was mm-hmm. doing that. And I think hers were more because she was afraid she was going to poop.
Mm-hmm.
And she was.
Yeah. One of my friends did that too.
Yeah. About that.
Uh-huh.
But, and I don't know what you know about enemas, Tiffany, but I did some research, and a Fleet enema is a specific kind of enema, but mm-hmm. just an enema in general can stimulate your bowels in a similar way to castor oil.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I would probably rather mix some castor oil into a smoothie and drink it mm-hmm. than it actually, go through an enema.
I didn't know. I mean, I don't know if you know, but it used to be fairly common practice during childbirth. Like, yeah, I don't know if any of our listeners watch Call the Midwife or if you watch Call the Midwife.
I mean, I've seen a few episodes. I get so angry sometimes, though.
I know. Like, it's really
I get
hard.
A little worked up, so I have a hard time watching it.
It was a different time, though. It was. You know? But yeah, that used to be very common practice.
Yep, in early labor. Yep, moms would have an enema. So can it help induce labor? It seems like it. It seems mm-hmm. like it could be sense. An option. Yeah, yeah. You know, stimulating your bowels in the same way that castor oil does and therefore mm-hmm. stimulating your uterus as well, getting everything kind of moving. What else was I just going to say? Something to think about is, you know, a lot of people don't want to poop during birth, but there is some evidence that says that, you know, that bowel movement can really actually help populate your baby's microbiome and be really helpful for your baby. So, I mean, I think that's just a minor thing, but it is just kind of something to think about that if you do an enema during early labor to try and induce labor, then, you know, you are probably less likely to poop during labor. And maybe that's a really good thing, but there have been some potential benefits to having a bowel movement as babies being born. So just something to think about.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
So interesting.
So I do know that she went on to have a really, really awesome birth. And she did get a membrane sweep, but mm-hmm. it looked like between that and maybe the enema, I'm not sure if she did it, that it worked out really, really well. And she ended up having a really wonderful, exciting birth. So
congratulations, Molly.
Yeah, congratulations. So I thought that was another really interesting question, though.
Yeah, that's a great question.
So our next question then comes in from Kara, and she is actually in the St. Louis area, which is fun. And she's with some midwives that we know.
Okay.
But, well, she was with some midwives that we know. She actually transferred care. But
okay.
Anyway, I'm probably getting into too many details there. She said so far her appointments with the midwives while she was still with them had been great, but she had some mm-hmm. concerns with hospital policy and mm-hmm. restrictions on birth. She mm-hmm. says, I really want to deliver the placenta on my own and not have mm-hmm. anyone adding traction to the cord. However, mm-hmm. the midwife mentioned that I have to squat to deliver the placenta. For my friends who have had natural births, this has not been the case. She also said a pharmacist would have to talk to me after my birth if I refused some of the medications or jabs mm-hmm. for her son. And then she Did also she? Said she is not big on cervical checks and she doesn't want one when she gets to the hospital upon admission.
Did she transfer to home?
She did not transfer to home. She transferred to a different care provider. I gave her some suggestions for a home birth, but it seemed like that wasn't working out for them. So, so there's a couple questions in there. So number one, if you want to deliver the placenta naturally, we actually just talked about this in our last episode.
We did. Yep.
So you do not have to squat to deliver your placenta naturally.
No.
If you don't want anybody tugging on it at all, if you don't want anybody to touch you at all, then yeah, a squat might be the easiest way to get the placenta out on your own. But even still.
Yeah, I mean, I've had clients who didn't need help at all and just delivered it themselves while they were lying on the bed.
Yeah, and so that's. I mean,
a lot of times, especially going unmedicated, you'll still get the urge to push and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not quite as strong as like when you're about to push out your baby. But yeah, you definitely don't need to squat unless if you are having trouble, right? Like you said, then it might be helpful to squat. But I'm so nosy. I want to know which midwife said that.
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
So, you know, and a lot of times if you are laying on your back, your midwives will just like gently guide the placenta out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just because gravity's not there to pull it out, you could guide it out on your own as well. And guiding it out or some very gentle traction is not the same as going in with their hand and pulling it out.
Yeah.
Or just yanking it out. So, so it is okay to have a little bit of help if you want that, but it's perfectly okay to try and explore delivering it on your own without being touched.
Yeah.
Completely reasonable either way, especially if your bleeding's under control.
Yeah.
So, what was her next question? It was, a pharmacist would have to talk to her after the birth if she refused some of the medications and jabs.
I've heard this too.
So I've never had a pharmacist come in and talk to my clients.
I've only heard it one time and it was about, okay. So actually our last episode, I talked about a birth that I went to that was a VBAC and the mom didn't want to do the injectable vitamin K. She wanted to do her own vitamin K. The nurse had said like, oh, you know, we also have the vitamin K that we can do orally. Mm-hmm. But if you have questions about it, the pharmacist will need to come up and talk to you about it because I don't have those answers. That's the only time that I have heard that.
Yeah. I'd never heard anything about a pharmacist coming up. Now, pediatricians will come in and quote, counsel you, especially when it comes to vitamin K.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you have to listen to what they say. You can choose 100% to still not do it. And in the case of, you know, vitamin K specifically, always tell my clients, give less information. Because if the more information you give, the more they have to pull on and try to break down your argument.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of my clients are Christians. So I just say, you know, just tell the care provider, we prayed about this and we feel like it is not necessary for our child.
Yeah.
And you can say that about any of them, the eye ointment or the Hep B as well. But usually I don't find much pushback with eye ointment or Hep B anymore, at least at the big hospitals.
It's usually vitamin K is the one that that my clients, not me, my clients get a lot of pushback on is vitamin K.
Same. Mm-hmm. Even with oral vitamin K, they'll get some pushback.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something to keep in mind. Will pharmacists come talk to you? I don't think so. But a pediatrician probably will.
But I also wonder if it's just something new that they're doing.
Could be.
You know?
Could be. Either way, you can say no.
Because I know that I know that we're talking about the same hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So yep. I almost wonder if it's just something new that they've implemented. Like,
could be.
So they can chart and charge for like a pharmacy consult.
Hey everyone, Rachel Manns here, and today I have something I'm thrilled to share with you guys. Imagine having a treasure trove of informative, entertaining, and empowering video content about the journey to parenthood right at your fingertips. That's exactly what you get with Informed Pregnancy Plus. For less than 25 cents a day, that's a quarter, guys, you'll gain access to a vast subscription library filled with documentary films, web series, mind and body fitness programs, workshops, and courses covering fertility to parenting and everything in between. Designed for new and expectant parents, as well as pregnancy and birth professionals, Informed Pregnancy Plus is like having a trusted BFF and doctor in one, guiding you through every step of the path to and through parenthood. A few of just my favorite titles are obviously The Business of Being Born, Empowered Mama, Belly Dance for Birth, How Fun Is That?, Ease into Sleep, The Afterbirth Plan, and The Core Connection, an extremely well-presented and informative workshop teaching you about your core and pelvic floor and how to keep them healthy. And here's the best part. For a limited time, you can gain full access absolutely free. Just visit informedpregnancy.tv to sign up. Sign up for Informed Pregnancy Plus right now. I'm not kidding, guys. It's really going to help you out. It's my prescription for your informed and empowered parenting journey, all from the comfort of your home. Visit informedpregnancy.tv. That's informedpregnancy.tv, and the link will be in the description below. Now back to the show. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That could be it.
Yeah, or so that they can say, like, the patient declined this, you know, so-and-so medication, you know, pharmacy consulted with them, like they still continue to decline or whatever. Yeah, I bet that's why.
Yeah, could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So either way, someone's going to come talk to you if you deny vitamin K.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's pretty standard at every hospital, but that doesn't mean you have to give in. There are some hospitals that will call CPS if moms refuse vitamin K.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that CPS is going to do anything about it, because CPS doesn't care. I was a foster parent for years. CPS does not care about that.
Well, I know. I think it was like 2018, 2019. DCFS actually made like a public statement saying that if hospitals called because parents declined vitamin K and or eye ointment, that they were not going to do anything about it.
Okay. And that's probably in our specific state, and maybe it's different states.
It is. Yeah. It's in Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I know this particular hospital is not going to call DCFS for that, because I've had clients decline vitamin K left and right over there. Yeah. So, but just so you know, you probably will be, quote, counseled by someone, but you still have every right to refuse.
Yeah.
And then her last question was about cervical checks upon being admitted to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Hospitals want a cervical exam when you're admitted.
Mm-hmm.
They just do. And some nurses cannot let go of that. Like, they will push and push and push. I had one nurse, I walked out of the room for like 2 minutes to go to the bathroom and get water. And I came back in, and you could feel the tension in that room. You could cut it with a knife. Mm-hmm. And what had happened was, as soon as I walked out of the room, the nurse looked at dad and told him to talk his wife, his, I don't know if they were married at the time, but talk his partner into consenting to a vaginal exam. Luckily, he looked at the nurse and shut her down really quickly.
Yeah. Good. Good.
But some nurses cannot let go of that vaginal exam upon admittance. And yeah, this mom was clearly in labor.
It's one of those like silly routine things that they do. And I find at birth centers, I don't know if you've had the same experience, it's because they don't want people there until they're quote unquote in active labor.
Right.
So I mean, I really feel like that's the main reason why they do it is to, you know, only admitted when they're like in active labor.
And now,
you and I know that like a cervical exam doesn't dictate if somebody is in early labor or active labor or whatever.
It's not a crystal ball. It doesn't tell you when you're going to give birth.
Unfortunately, we have a culture where it's all about numbers and data and statistics. Yep. So unfortunately, that's why those stupid policies exist.
Yep. I went from 4 centimeters to having a baby with my first baby in 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then I know plenty of other moms who are 7, 8, 9 centimeters for 10 hours before they give birth. It doesn't tell you much of anything, but the hospital wants it. Does that mean you have to consent to it? No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. You do not have to consent to that vaginal exam or that cervical exam. But know that you might get some pushback. So if you really want to deny that exam upon admission, you and your partner or your whole birthing team needs to practice saying no together. How are you going to say no to this team, even when they push back? Without making waves, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to make waves and then go in and have this really tense birth. That's not helping anybody.
Yeah.
So how are you going to say no? You need to practice that ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Okay. Yep.
Anything else on that one?
I don't think so.
All right. Oh, we are zooming right through these. So we have one more that was a really good one. It might take us a little bit longer to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This mama's name is Dana. And she says, hey, Rachel, I'm 33 and pregnant with my first baby. My family has a history of carrying babies to 42 weeks and then getting induced. Mm-hmm. Is this best practice to induce at 42 weeks? Are there any other specific examples where inducing labor is more beneficial to mom and or baby? Thanks. Okay.
Interesting question. Yeah.
Right. So what's standard in hospitals when it comes to 42 weeks?
Oh, usually, I mean, in my experience, they don't want people to go past 41 weeks. Half the time, they don't even want them to go past 40.
Or 39. They're like, 39 weeks, let's induce you, right?
Honestly, though, in my experience, 41 is a hard stop.
Is it? So most of the providers I work with, 42 is the hard stop, right?
Really? In a hospital?
Well, I mean, I'm picky about who I work with. Yeah. So you know, the OBs that I tend to work with, 42 is kind of the stop. And with my first, too, the midwife and OB team I was with, it was 42 weeks. But 41 is becoming more and more popular.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer the 42-week question, it's a bit of a loaded question.
Yeah.
And here's why. So at 42 weeks, your risk of having a stillborn doubles.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds really scary, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That sounds really scary to hear the word doubles. That is called the relative risk. Okay. In reality, your risk of having a stillborn at 42 weeks goes from less than 0.5% to less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So while, yes, the relative risk technically doubles, the absolute risk barely changes.
Yeah.
It barely changes at 42 weeks. And so that is something you really want to keep in mind. So I cannot tell you what best practice for you and your baby is. Right. You know, maybe instinctively you feel like you want to be induced at 42 weeks or sooner.
Right.
But Tiffany and I know plenty of people who have gone past 42 weeks. A lot of our own clients, other people we know, more common with home births.
Mm-hmm.
Most home birth midwives are happy to let their clients go to 42, 43 weeks even. Some will let them go past 43. It's pretty rare to have a mom go past 43 weeks if the conception date is correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty, pretty rare. And really, it's pretty rare for mom to go past 42 weeks if they have the right conception date. But if you're in the hospital, even a birthing center, they really want you to be induced by 42 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you have to consent to it?
No,
not at all. Right.
But also in my experience, they will try to do everything in their power to make that happen by 42 mm-hmm. weeks. So let's do a non-stress test and mm-hmm. check your amniotic fluid levels. Oh, what do you know? Magically, your amniotic fluid level is low. So they scare you. Mm-hmm. Or baby had, you know, they're saying baby had like a non-reactive non-stress test. So, mm-hmm. oh, it's dangerous. We got to get your baby out of here. Mm-hmm. I have seen that be the case as well.
Absolutely. Or they start pushing natural induction methods at 40, 41 weeks, which, you know, by 41 weeks, if you're really trying to avoid a medical induction and you really want to hit that 42 week mark, yeah, it's probably fine. You know, if you really, really want to start some natural induction techniques at 41 weeks, would I do it? Probably not. I'd probably let my body keep growing my baby as long as it desires. But you know, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's really important to also consider what your normal is. And if you mm-hmm. know that like your family just has a history of going to 42 or past 42 or whatever the case is, there's probably a reason for that.
Yeah. Like a biological component.
Biological reason why your babies just aren't ready at 40 weeks or 41 weeks.
Exactly. And considering too, what is your cycle like? What's your monthly mm-hmm. cycle like? Right. Is it a perfect 28-day cycle every single month? Mm-hmm. Do you know that you ovulate
super late? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you want to know when you ovulate, because if your cycle is not a perfect 28-day cycle and you don't ovulate on an exact day, then your estimated due date could be off. So it could be something as simple as that. But like Tiffany said, knowing what your normal is, and if your whole family tends to go to 42 weeks and get induced, then maybe you guys just grow your babies a little bit longer.
Yeah. You know? And there's nothing wrong with that.
Every body and every person and everything, we're all different. And mm-hmm. it's just like Tylenol works really well for some of us and it doesn't work at all for some of us. Mm-hmm. And yeah. it's because we're all different. And so, you know, 9 months, 40 weeks works really well for some mom and babies. And right. then for others, they always go to 42 weeks or past that. And I know, you know, I have one person in mind specifically who's never given birth before 41 weeks. Mm-hmm. And 2 out of 3 of her babies were past 42 weeks and she had home mm-hmm. births and everything was perfectly safe and fine. So, you know, you want to know the evidence on that 42 week mark. And so when you look at the relative risk, yeah, your risk of stillborn doubles, that sounds really scary and seems like mm-hmm. a really good reason to induce. But mm-hmm. when you look at the absolute risk that it changes less than 0.5%, it barely yeah. changes. You're like, mm-hmm. oh, well, that's barely anything.
Right.
You know, yep. and what's another common thing that we hear when moms go past their due date?
Oh, that their baby's going to be really big.
That their baby's going to be really big. That the placenta mm-hmm. is going to stop working.
The placenta is going to stop working. Yeah.
So those are both super common ones we hear too. But guess what? We rarely grow babies we can't birth.
Yep.
Not worried about the size of the baby unless you have uncontrolled gestational diabetes or you had rickets mm-hmm. as a child. Those mm-hmm. are those are about the only two reasons that you might grow a baby you can't birth. Yeah. Very, very rare. And then as far as the placenta stop working, there's actually no evidence that supports that. It's all anecdotal.
Zero. Yeah.
And they all just see that placenta looks older when it's born, when mm-hmm. you're that close to 42.
Well, why would it look young when it's like about right. to have a baby and it doesn't need, yeah. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So exactly. Yeah. It looks older because it is older, but that doesn't mean it's not working.
Yeah.
Right. As long as you're doing well and your baby's doing well, and you have to know what well is.
Yeah.
Quote, failing a non-stress test just because your baby wasn't reactive doesn't mean your baby's not doing well. Mm-hmm. It just means your baby was probably sleeping.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Babies sleep too. Having low amniotic fluid. Well, are you dehydrated?
Right.
Did you
have middle of summer? Is it 105 degrees outside?
Right. Did you have an extra ultrasound to double check? Because a lot of times ultrasounds are very inaccurate when checking fluid levels. Mm-hmm. The pockets will hide behind each other and it's very hard to check those things on ultrasounds. And how's your baby moving? Is your baby moving really well? Instinctually, mm-hmm. do you feel like everything's going well? Those are all things you need to consider when you consider if you want to be induced or not.
Yeah.
So anything else you want to add to that one?
Nope.
Okay.
Just that I don't know, maybe you've had the same people like reaching out or whatever, but I have had a few people reach out, say that they They really loved the intervention series. They thought it was really great information that mm-hmm. they themselves, like even birth workers, had learned information from some of the things that we shared. So I thought that that was really awesome.
We're just so happy to be able to get this information out there.
Right. We worked really hard on this. We're really proud of it. Mm-hmm. So of course, you know, share if you can, share with your friends, share with other birth workers, share with your clients.
Mm-hmm. Rate our podcast.
Yeah. Rate the podcast, right. Interact with our social media. Those are all ways that you can help us grow.
Absolutely. And something to also kind of talk about all these things, you know, we had a couple close to induction type questions and other things is, you know, if you are properly nourished, if your body is well taken care of, it's going to support your baby so much better.
Yeah.
And so no matter what your question might be or where you think your birth might be going, maybe you go to 42 weeks, maybe you birth at 38 weeks, you know, who knows, nourish your body. And so we really love Full Well vitamins. It's a really great way to nourish your body.
I even take it myself.
Yeah. So there's so many things you can do for yourself out there.
And I know particularly we like to shout out their prenatal vitamin, but they have so many other great offerings. They have a men's prenatal vitamin. They have
fish oil. It's not a prenatal if it's for men's.
Well, yeah, no, it's like
like before conception? Health.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
They have morning sickness gummies. They have a fertility booster supplement that has awesome. Like NAC and ashwagandha in it. They have a really great nerve tonic.
I've heard that one's really good. I know what you're talking
the
about.
Name of it. It's yeah, okay. It's delicious. Also, I will take it sometimes before bed. So yeah, you can use our code to get a discount.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's and help support us.
I think it's TNBT10. I know it's 10, in the description below. Yeah. So, and that is one more thing that, you know, we asked you to share this, share our series, not just with your pregnant friends, but anyone who's looking to have a baby one day.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because if you could learn this information before you're even pregnant, it's going to make your pregnancy easier. We have a couple episodes about fertility or where we talk about fertility too. And, you know, you can start preparing your body and preparing your brain for birth before you're even pregnant. And that really is the best way to go. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's our little plug for some of our good stuff. I guess that's all that we have for our question and answer. I mean, that was some really good questions.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. In the follow-up. Also, right, those women that wrote in that asked about inductions or whatever, they should write in and let us know what they decided to do.
Yes, that is great. I will respond to them because I know at least one of them hasn't birthed yet. So
yeah, yeah.
I'll send out requesting follow-ups because, you know, we just want to know.
Yeah.
We're curious. We want to know how it went. So, and you guys, again, continue sending in questions and stories and anything you want read because we can pepper that into most of our episodes.
For sure. Or if we get enough, we can even do like a question and answer episode like once every other month or something if we can get enough.
Yeah. We can just start piling them up or whatever. So, okay. Thanks for listening. I'm sure this shorter episode was a nice relief after our long one 2 weeks ago.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. We are so excited to finish up this intervention series in our question and answer section. Don't forget to keep tuning in because we have some really great podcast guests coming up in the next few months. We're so excited about it. So
yes,
we'll talk to you guys in the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Everyone.
Bye. Hi, Rachel Manns again. If you want to learn more, please subscribe to and rate this podcast and head over to thenaturalbirthsite.com to check out our online natural birth education course, birth story blog, YouTube channel, and more.